Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Oh, it seems like it's time, and we haven't started yet.
Man, I'm just a talent.
We have started.
It's not. I am 1,000% not in charge around here. Hey, everybody, I'm Kyle Rosedahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
And I am Kimberly Adams. Thanks to everyone for joining us on the podcast and folks who are watching on the YouTube live stream for Happy Hour Friday, or Economics on Tap, as it's known. And do notice the swag today. Hold on, I've got a new computer. I got to see see the swag. Yeah. Swag, hoodie.
Kimberly's got the hat, too.
I got the hat.
There we go.
And the hoodie.
You're all
Look
over
at
this,
us.
Man.
We're all swagged
this.
Out.
I got to fix that. Swagged out. That's what we are. Why does my head look all cut off? There we go. All right. Is that better? Sorry, I'm just looking down at the YouTube. Because it's all about the pictures. Anyway, so here we are. We're going to do what we usually do on a Friday. We'll do the news fix. A little half full, half empty. Drew's in charge of that. Audience poll on the last one. We'll take a quick spin through and see what people are drinking. And there we go. Debbie Donovan says, doesn't Kimberly look great in the beanie? She does.
Thank you, Debbie. Appreciate it.
Where's Jasper?
He's right there.
Gotcha.
He's watching you, actually.
Yeah, well.
He's definitely staring right at your face.
Yes.
All right, what else do we have?
So let's see. What are you drinking?
Bourbon apple ginger smash. Oh, right.
Oh, I could drink
Being a little bit lazy today. I've got pomegranate juice and tequila with some rosemary bitters.
I don't think the Gill is ever, going lazy. So I'm doing something different, a little Voodoo Ranger Juice Force Hazy IPA, 9.5% ABV, which is kind of a lot. Also, it's almost a little too fruity. I don't know. We'll see. Of course, by the bottom of it, it'll be 9.5% ABV, so I won't care. Brett Sharp agrees with me on the Voodoo. Yeah, it's a little fruity.
All right. Yes, let's do the news fix. I'll go first because mine's a follow-up to the story I was talking about earlier this week about the DNC reshuffling the primary calendar. And lo and behold, today they voted to drastically change it.
Yeah.
And that's after Joe Biden recommended that they elevate South Carolina to go first. So now, let's see. I'm reading here from Politico. And let's see. The revised proposal would see South Carolina host the first 2024 presidential primary on February 3rd, a Saturday, followed 3 days later by New Hampshire and Nevada. Georgia would then hold an early primary on February 13th, and Michigan would hold its contest on February 27th. Iowa would be out of the early lineup altogether. So the little mom and pop diners in Iowa can finally have a break from the hundreds and thousands of political reporters that would descend on them every primary and caucus season. But like I said earlier in the week, there is a ton of money and logistics and power and influence wrapped up in this.
Is it a done deal? Is this the way it's going to be?
They voted on it. It looks like it was a near unanimous vote. Let's see. This is the members of the party's Rules and Bylaws Committee who are charged with recommending the new calendar. So, I mean, I doubt that. I mean, obviously the DNC has to, like the broader DNC will have to vote on these things. But I doubt it's going to get overturned at this point. I have to imagine they want to project unity on this.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what are the Republicans going to do? Are they going to match?
Don't know.
Stay
That's
the way
actually
they are?
A big question. That's a big question. Huh. Like, I mean, for all the reasons the Democrats wanted to move it, there's the same reasons the Republicans might want to stay the same. You know, Iowa's right. quite Republican now.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So I don't think they've had.
It'll be interesting
their
to see.
Yet.
It'll be interesting to see. Well, so look. So, I mean, let's play this out. Assuming Biden runs in 2024, this is a nothing burger of a story, right? Do you agree mm-hmm. or disagree?
Right? Yes. If Biden runs in 2024, it doesn't matter because it won't be really a meaningful primary. True.
Right. So, really, what we're talking about here is 2028.
Yes. If Biden definitely runs, which he said he's going to do. But there is a growing chorus within the Democratic Party trying to convince him not to. And what it reminds me of, actually, is the pressure that was on Ruth Bader Ginsburg to step down from the Supreme Court and let Obama take that, make a nomination there. And there is a group of discourse that would say that a lot of what we're experiencing right now with the Supreme Court is because of that.
I don't think it's actually debatable. It's not a discourse. It's just a statement of fact, right?
I mean
that's
it's
why
a super majority.
There.
Yes, right. This is true. But you know, anyhow, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
But it's just that the pressure for a Supreme Court justice to step down is such a delicate thing. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg was such a sort of trailblazer in what she was mm-hmm. doing. Mm-hmm. And so, like, on the one hand, I get it. And she couldn't possibly have predicted this out. Well, she might have been able to. But, you know, it is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very curious on the Biden running question. I'm on the record as saying I think he decides not to run. I said that on Pivot with Kara Swisher a number of weeks ago. I think he will realize that being an 80-year-old man, 82 at the time of the election, right, will not be good for the party or the country. But I think it's going to take his family. It's going to take Jill going to him and saying, hey, Joe, you can't do this.
Well, honestly, there was a lot of writing after Nancy Pelosi stepped down saying you know, this was sort of a nod to the fact that that generation right. needs to release the reins and make space. And, you know, that could include Biden as well.
Yeah, I keep thinking of the John F. Kennedy inaugural address, right? Let the word be passed, let the torch be passed to a new generation, right? And that, I think, is where we are with the Democratic leadership. Anyway, this is not a political podcast. So we'll move on.
But it all comes down to money, doesn't it?
it kind of does. Kind of does.
All right. What are yours?
All right. So here's mine. It's from Betsy Stevenson, who's an economist, a labor economist at the University of Michigan, posting today some charts from the University of Michigan Center on Poverty Solutions, which is really, really interesting. Read it in full. We'll put it there. But she points out that in this morning's jobs report, which is, of course, the November jobs report, 263,000 jobs added. Women gained 62% of the jobs added in November, which, yay, right, is really good. But then you go on to read, that most of those job gains occurred in education and health services, which is, number one, very female-dominated as labor sectors, and also, number two, not extremely well-paid, or maybe extremely not well-paid is a better way to put that. And so it's a little yay, but not yay. And that's just
so
worth pointing out.
I'm typing furiously here because there was this New York Times story that I saw the other day that the headline is, "Why Are Middle-Aged Men Missing from the Labor Market?"
Okay.
And it's really interesting. Yeah. Gina, who was on your show today, is one of the co-authors of this piece.
Right.
Yes, Gina Smilek. And apparently, like, middle-aged men have been steadily declining in their labor force participation, and economists are really struggling to figure out why. And so, as when you mentioned that, you know, women are coming back to the labor force and getting these jobs, that made it remind me of that story.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about Gina's story is that these men are casualties of the 2008 financial crisis, is the way Gina and Ben Castleman in their reporting pointed out. But I will tell you, so Gina was on Marketplace this afternoon, and what happens is that we go to air at 2 o'clock L.A. time for Marketplace. And so I get into the studio about 1:56, 1:57, and Gina's there chit-chatting with Heather Long, who's at the Washington Post. She's an editorial writer there now. She's on the editorial board. And they were chit-chatting, and I joined the conversation, and I said hi. And Heather said, "By the way, Gina, 35 to 44-year-old men, middle-aged, what are you thinking?" And I climbed in and said, "Are you kidding me? 35 to 44 is middle-aged. What am I, like a geriatric senior citizen person?" So we had a little laugh before the show went on the air.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, you're like, "Hello, 35 to 44, middle-aged? Shut up."
And actually, I'm just thinking that means that I'm middle-aged, which I hadn't really thought of myself as.
Welcome to it, sister. I'm just telling you. It doesn't feel so good, does it? Doesn't feel so good, does it?
I kind of love it. I feel like I'm going to peak in my 40s. I do.
Oh, I did. Oh, I definitely did. I definitely did. But then I turned 50 and it was all over. Yeah. So, you know. Anyway. All right. Anyway,
I'm feeling quite good about my 40s. Okay. What's your other one?
Oh, my God. Oh, my. No, that was it. It was the other one was a link to the whole study from the University of Michigan Center. And we'll just put it in the show notes. But it's actually a really interesting read on the labor market and what's going on and women and where jobs are coming. And people should read it. And we'll put it on the show. That's it. That's what I got. Oh, my God. Yeah. Drew, save me.
All right. This is Half Full, Half Empty. It's a game hosted by Drew Jostad where we reveal how we're feeling about stories from the week for the newbies here. Half full means we're feeling good to positive-ish about them. Half empty means, you know, we don't. And for all those on the YouTube live stream, please feel free to weigh in. And we're going to have a poll on the last question that you can click and you can tell us your votes in real time. And we can see how we all line up, if at all. Drew, take it away.
Are you half full or half empty on what Spotify Wrapped can tell us about the state of our data privacy?
You go first, Kai.
Well, so look, so I think these Spotify Wrapped things are fun. And for the past couple of years, they've been really amusing for me just as a sort of a, here's what you've been listening to. This year, somehow my account got mixed up with a family account, which somehow got mixed up with the kids' accounts. And I don't know exactly what happened, but mine is all out of whack, which is why you're not seeing on our social feeds. We have no data privacy. We have no data privacy. Get over it. As Scott McNeely from Sun Microsystems said, lo, these many decades ago, we have no privacy. Get over it.
So I actually don't have Spotify, and so I watched all of these with interest, and Marissa tells me that there's a way I can find it on Apple, but I haven't quite seen it yet. I don't know that I want to know exactly, because I feel like my listening is going to be very skewed by work, because I'm listening to a lot of stuff for work, like streaming. I'm streaming different public radio stations. I'm streaming, like, through the apps. I'm listening to a lot of podcasts. And so I guess if it was only looking at the music that I streamed, it's going to be like a whole bunch of songs I play on repeat. And those go all across the spectrum, because I'm that person who, when I like a song, I'll listen to it over and over and over again, and then I'll move on to another song and listen to it over and over and over again, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, lots of people are telling me it's called Apple Music has Replay. And I used to have a Pandora account, Matthew, but I mean, I guess it still exists. I haven't used it in a while. So, no, I don't know. I don't know my listening habits, but I am, I don't know, half empty. I'd love to have a little bit more mystery. Of, you know, I feel like listening to music is, you know, something that we're supposed to do to rest and sort of not, like, calculate ourselves and measure ourselves. And I also listen to vinyl records sometimes. Good luck capturing that. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, look, I'm with you. I think I spend way too much time listening to and being immersed in the news and the idea that just escaping with music and whatever is Super healthy.
Matthew Carroll makes a good point that he says when he's writing scientific papers, I listen to Gregorian chants. Actually, wow. I do something similar, which is I have a like specific music I listen to when I'm writing. I have specific music that I will listen to when I'm trying when I'm like super stressed and trying to like chill myself out during the workday. I have different music that I listen to like for fun. And so depending on what I'm doing, the music is so drastically different.
Hmm. That's yes. interesting.
Okay. Sorry, we went on okay. too long. Drew.
Whatever. It's our podcast. We can do what we want.
Half full or half empty on the future of Black Twitter?
Oh, so let's set this up, right? Kimberly, you talked about this today on Tech.
Yeah, so there we interviewed an academic. She's a PhD candidate at the University of Colorado, yep. Boulder, who has written on the power of Black Twitter. And actually, we didn't get to this in the show, but she compared it to sort of the Green Book of old, which was sort of this book and pamphlet that Black people would use to find sort of safe places to stop when they were traveling in the Jim Crow South and elsewhere. And she was saying that Black Twitter, sort of the amorphous Black section of Twitter, if you may, created a similar vibe, sort of a safe space for Black people to go and to find community and on some level a little bit of safety. But at the same time, you get exposed to a lot of trolls, especially more now. Apparently, usage of the N-word has skyrocketed since Musk's takeover. Mm. And so there's been a lot of angst as people are considering leaving Twitter and what's going to happen to Twitter. Is Twitter going to break? What's going to happen to this very unique mm-hmm. community that was created online? And it was an interesting discussion. And the answer kind of is we don't know. It depends on where people gather next. But I don't know that we're ever going to recreate what that was. And I've definitely heard from a lot of the people who were really active in that space that they're just leaving. And I've definitely been tweeting less. Like, I retweet stuff and I tweet work stuff, but I'm definitely less engaged on the platform than I was.
Yeah.
And it's not just Black Twitter, though, and she talks about that. It's also disability Twitter. It's also, you know, econ Twitter and gay Twitter and all these other communities that found space and community there. And I think that's going to be really sad if it actually leaves. So I'm half empty. Book
One
Twitter,
guy
yes, Sarah.
With $44 billion decided to light it on fire and just destroy a bunch of stuff. It's the most remarkable thing.
Ryan Coleman honestly. Points out something that I saw earlier that Tech Twitter is going to. He was pointing out that Molly,
yeah.
you know, did a big thing that Molly Wood, former host of Make Me Smart, has done a big thing that she's leaving Twitter and going to Substack. And I think Jelani Cobb said he was leaving Twitter as well.
Oh, wow.
It's like
he's the
a lot
dean
of people.
Of the Journalism School of Columbia. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Huh.
Let me make sure I'm getting that right.
No, I think you did, actually. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you did. All right, sorry. Yeah, a very quick and unusual beer interstitial here. This is almost too floral. It's too, it tastes almost soapy, which is weird. And the glass is clean.
I have to say, I'm not in love with my drink today either.
Yeah. What? Wow.
I usually
What's
do this
with
bourbon, but, you know, the only bourbon I had was this fancy bottle that my friend gave me, and I didn't want to open it, and so the tequila was open, and
so,
I don't love it.
So, all right, what time is it? Oh, screw it. We got time.
It's our podcast. Why we can go as long as we want
it's
to.
It's our podcast. That's exactly right, and right now Marissa's tearing your hair out. But look, why did you not want to open the fancy bottle?
Because I want to open it the next time we hang out.
Okay, but the contents inside, whether they are freshly opened or, you know, halfway down the bottle, they'll still be good.
Yeah, but I feel like if it's open, I'll be tempted to use it when, like, I don't really need to use it. Well, and then it might be gone by the next time.
But you have to have your friend over sooner. That's all I'm saying.
They live in New York.
It's like what? It's like a 4-hour drive. Shut up.
All right. Anyway.
Anyway. All right.
Way down
okay,
this
fine.
Rabbit hole.
Okay. Fine. Drew.
So neither one of us like our drinks, and it's making us cranky and curmudgeony. Okay.
That's,
go ahead.
That's exactly right. Oh my God. Drew.
Drew, save us, please.
Well,
for the love of God.
I have a topic nobody could be cranky about. Are you half full or half empty on the video assistant referee in the World Cup?
Oh man.
I don't know this
so
story.
Look. So here. Yeah, so look, so VAR, video assistant referee, was introduced into professional soccer a number of years ago in order to help the referee on the field make calls that are difficult, but also to help on the objective calls, offside, where the ball has crossed the goal line within the goalposts and underneath the goal, that is to say in a goal. And it's getting a lot of press in the World Cup because obviously it's a big deal. Here's my thing with VAR. Which is not, by the way, for the stock market weenies among you, value at risk. VAR is a really good tool. Here's my caveat. I think it has to be time limited. I don't think you can have the referee on the field talking to the VAR referee for 90 seconds, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. You can't do it. I think you get 45 seconds. You're either in or you're out. You change the call or you don't. You have a look or you don't, and then you move on. It's just too disruptive. I'm totally soccer weenying out. I apologize.
So that sounds like half empty.
I'm kind of half empty. I mean, I appreciate the thought, but I'm mostly half empty on how it's being utilized. Yes.
I have zero opinion, so I'm just going to go with yours, and I'm going to go half empty.
There you go.
Although I will say, I did encounter, like, I'm not really watching just because I don't care. But I did find a very entertaining Trevor Noah clip this week where he was talking about the Saudi Arabian team, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how the Saudi team represents the World Cup at its finest because I guess they were playing badly. And their coach was yelling at them in the locker room. But a lot of these teams, you know, especially in, you know, non-European countries, still have coaches from Europe or the United States or wherever.
Exactly.
So
that's exactly right. Yeah.
There's a video of the coach yelling. But the thing is, so the coach is from France. I'm going to get this right. The coach is from France, right? But the translator that the Saudis hired for the team doesn't speak French. So the coach is yelling at the team in English, and the translator is translating the coach yelling at the team into Arabic, and it is hilarious to watch. I enjoyed it.
What could possibly go wrong? Yeah, look, I love the World Cup. I'm going to get up at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning on a Saturday to watch the Americans and Netherlands, but... Anyway, so that's where I am on VAR. Drew, save us from this soccer tempest.
Last topic.
Oh, wait, so we have a poll.
Oh, last
Everybody
topic.
Get
poll,
ready.
Poll, poll, poll.
Yes.
Okay.
Everybody get All ready.
Right.
Oh, wait, hold on a second. I'm seeing
of you in
complaints
the live chat.
Of the video.
What?
Okay, just want to make sure. Okay, go ahead. Let's do it.
Our video?
No. I think it was just somebody, one person. I think it's just you, Christian.
Oh, all right.
Kristen.
Okay.
Anyway, let's do it.
Okay, this week Pepsi launched a campaign encouraging people to try mixing their Pepsi with milk and use the hashtag Pilk and Cookies. Are you half full or half empty?
I have thoughts.
I think you should share those thoughts.
I believe by you to wait until everybody has weighed in.
I said to wait to give your half full, half empty until everybody has
right,
weighed
okay.
in. But I think you can give your thoughts leading up to it. It's sort of like a ramp up. Builds the excitement.
Okay. All right, that's fair. Okay, so I'm going to date myself here, but who remembers Laverne and Shirley? Okay, and of course you remember Laverne and Shirley mixing milk and Pepsi. Do we remember that? Oh, yes. No, definitely it happened. Definitely it happened. I'm sorry. I have to Google this now. I'm going to be back on this podcast in about 90 seconds. Kimberly, you take it.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, as someone who definitely likes to mix all sorts of things together for drinking purposes, I don't know how those – I'm trying to imagine those two flavor profiles. Like, We were very much a Pepsi household growing up. My mother had cases and cases of Diet Pepsi, like always on hand. And I didn't really get a lot of exposure to Coke products until Coca-Cola products until I was older. And I think I prefer it. And so I always find Pepsi to be very, very sweet.
It's very sweet. And yeah, super sweet.
The aftertaste, I'm trying to, like, I don't drink a lot of milk either because I'm lactose intolerant. So I don't know, man. Okay, did you find what you were looking for?
I did. And let me just tell you that the third entry that comes up when you put in milk Pepsi is Laverne and Shirley. And so there was an episode of the Laverne and Shirley show in which they mixed milk and Pepsi. And I don't want to go farther down this rabbit hole, but I was not wrong. Wait, so Drew, repeat the question, please.
Do you want to drink it or not?
I do not want to drink it. No, I do not want it in a house. I do not want it on a mouse. I do not want it in a box or with a fox. I do not want it. No.
It seems like you do not want it, Kai. I am.
No, I do not. Kai, I am. That's right. I do not want it. No. Oh, my God.
I also do not want it. Although a lot of people in the chat are pointing out that it's effectively a float, like equivalent to a melted like root beer float
kinda,
or something like that.
Kinda. That's true. That's kind of true. Yeah, with a little ice cream in there.
Yeah. All right. Let's see how. Oh, when I right, clicked
you,
on the
you,
poll,
you figured it out, made, I can't.
The poll made the chat go away. That's sad.
Wait, hold on. Because I can't get the Slack from here. Oh, my God.
We're both just incompetent
we're
today.
We're just pathetic. Also, we're both basically sober because we don't like our drinks.
Yeah, I know. I have not made much progress on this.
All right. Here you go. So, oh, my goodness. So the poll is complete with 191 votes. Half empty on milk and Pepsi, 90%. Half full, 9%. I would like a word with the 9% of you who said half full. Just saying.
Yeah, I think we might judge you a little. A lot. Sorry.
Just, you know, a little bit. Yeah. A little bit.
No, a lot. Let's be honest.
Oh, my lordy be. Drew. Get us dead. Get us out of here.
Oh,
Jesus. All right.
Boy.
So we are done on a Friday, mercifully. What time is it? I'm sorry. I'm looking at the clock. Look at that. We went almost a half an hour.
Oh.
Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. That's fine. So we're done. We got to get out of here. Back next week. If you have questions you want us to answer for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, it's about business, the economy, tech, or anything, actually, let us know. Please, please, please.
Yes, please do. You can reach us at our number, which is 508-UB-SMART. You can leave us a voicemail, or you can email us at makemesmart@marketplace.org.
It's funny. So right now, like Marissa and Courtney and Bridget, if she's listening, and Donna, they're just all like, what do you people know? Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera and Courtney Birdseeker. Today's episode was engineered by Drew Jostad, who also wrote the theme music for Half Full, Half Empty.
The team behind our Friday game is Mel Rosenberg and Emily McCune. Bridget Bodner is our senior producer, who, as we've said, is on Million Bazillion. And Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital.
All right, so you know what's funny? So here's how much of that beer I'm leaving undrunk. I'm not into this beer, which is really rare. Yeah, there you go. Look at that, right? Yeah, it's kind of wild. A little sad.
I feel like I'm looking all over the place today. I'm adjusting to this new setup. I got to get my camera situation worked out.
It's all good.
But we represented the swag.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.